Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Contra Radio Network. Preparedness Radio. With your host, John Jeffers.
All right. Welcome back to the CRN. We had to restart everything because it appeared that, well, for some reason, the microphone decided it wasn't going to work. Just wasn't going to happen. So we had to restart everything, restart the episode. That's fine. Anyways, let me restart it. I was talking Thursday night to Justin out in California, and he spoke about the way his college professors act. One of his professors actually has a communist flag that he uses as a backdrop from his lectern so he can give his indoctrination speech to the students. And it got me thinking, it's like, you know, maybe we should do something about prepping for, you know, a second American Civil War, a war of ideology. So, you know, if you're like me, the last couple of years you've been kind of watching stuff, and it's kind of been rattling around in the back of your head. You just can't quite, it's like, man, something's not right. You can't quite figure it out. You can't quite make it out, but you know it's there. It's rattling around. You just can't quite sort it out to make sense of what it is you want to do. So, and all of a sudden, when Justin talked to me, it's like it all crystallized for me. So I thought, you know what? Let me do a show and ask the question of all the listeners. Are we on the verge of a second American Civil War? Now, before we give out, and before I start taking calls, give me about 15, 20 minutes. You know, I'll let you know when to call in. The chat room's open. And I just want to take some time to get the information out there so that way we all got something to think about. And as preppers, this is important because, you know, danger comes. It comes in all different. What is that? I got all kinds of stuff coming over the headphones. Yeah, right. Like I care. If I could find it, I'll delete them. Anyways, so let me, danger comes from all this in different scenarios, whether it's a catastrophe, a riot, looting, or another war. So the question becomes this, all right? This is from townhall.com. I say, I don't want to see that one. No, this is better, I think. Let me make sure. This is from National Review with Dennis Prager. All right, let me make sure this is a good one. Because I want to get this out right. That's why. That's why I'm checking. Okay. And because I had to start the show over again, thanks, BTR. Appreciate it. Love it when you screw up technically and I got to start again. Thank you. Makes me happy. All right. So, anyways, the chat room's open. You guys can go in there and attack each other. I see Tim's there. Hey, Tim, welcome. Okay. Are we on the verge of a second American Civil War? This is written by Dennis Prager, January 24th, 2017, 4 days after Trump's inauguration. Oh, and that's President Trump. That's also Hillary Clinton's president and Barack Obama's president. All right. We're in a fight over basic values. It is time that our society acknowledges a sad truth. America is currently fighting its second civil war. In fact, with the obvious and enormous exception of attitudes towards slavery, Americans are more divided morally, ideologically, and politically today than they were during the Civil War. For that reason, just as the Great War came to be known as the First World War, once there was a Second World War, the Civil War will become known as the First Civil War when more Americans come to regard the current battle as the Second Civil War. Now, the Second Civil War, fortunately, differs in one critically important way. It has thus far been largely nonviolent, but given the increasing left-wing violence, such as riots, the violent taking over of college presidents' offices, and the illegal occupation of state capitals, nonviolence is not guaranteed to be a permanent characteristic of the Second Civil War. Now, there are those on both the left and the right who call for American unity, but these are calls that are either naive or disingenuous. Unity was possible between the right and liberals, but not between the right and the left. Let me explain. Liberalism, which was anti-left, pro-American, and deeply committed to the Judeo-Christian foundation of America, regard the melting pot as the American ideal, fought for free speech for its opponents, regarded Western civilization as the greatest moral and artistic human achievement, and viewed the celebration of racial identity as racism, is now affirmed almost exclusively on the right among a handful of people who don't call themselves conservatives. The left, however, is opposed to every one of those core principles of liberalism. Like the left in every other country, the left in America sees America as essentially a racist, xenophobic, colonialist, imperialist, warmongering, money-worshipping, moronically religious nation. And just as in Western Europe, the left in America seeks to erase America's Judeo-Christian foundations. The melting pot is regarded as nothing more than an anti-black, anti-Muslim, anti-Hispanic meme. The left suppresses free speech wherever possible for those who oppose it, labeling all non-left speech hate speech. To cite only one example, if you think Shakespeare was the greatest playwright or Bach the greatest composer, you are a proponent of dead white European males and therefore a racist. Without any important value held in common, how can there be unity between left and non-left? Obviously, there cannot. There will only be unity when the left vanquishes the right or the right vanquishes the left. Using the First Civil War analogy, American unity was achieved only after the South was vanquished and slavery abolished. However, how are those who oppose left-wing nihilism, there is no other word for an ideology that holds Western civilization and America's core values in contempt, supposed to unite with, you know, educators who instruct elementary school teachers to cease calling their students boys and girls because that implies gender identity, with English departments that don't require reading Shakespeare in order to receive a degree in English, with those who regard virtually every war America fought as imperialist and immoral, with those who regard the free market as a form of oppression, with those who want the state to control as much of American life as possible, with those who repeatedly tell America and its black minority that the greatest problems afflicting black Americans are all caused by white racism, white privilege, and systemic racism. With those who think that the nuclear family ideal is inherently misogynic and homophobic. With those who hold that Israel is the villain in the Middle East. With those who claim that the term Islamic terrorist is an expression of religious bigotry. The third significant difference between the First and Second Civil Wars is that one side has been doing nearly all the fighting. That's how it's been able to take over the schools, from elementary schools to high schools to the universities, and indoctrinate America's young people, how it has taken over nearly all the news media, and how it has taken over the entertainment media. The conservative side has lost on every one of these fronts because it has rarely fought back with anything near the ferocity with which the left fights. Name a Republican politician who has run against the left, as opposed to running solely against his or her Democratic opponent. And nearly all American conservatives, people who are proud of America and affirm its basic tenets, readily send their children to schools that indoctrinate their children against everything the parents hold precious. Now, a mere handful protest when their child's teacher ceases calling their son a boy or a girl. When a child's teacher ceases calling their son a boy or their daughter a girl, or makes slave owner the defining characteristics of the founding fathers. With the defeat of the left in the last presidential election, the defeat of the left in 2/3 of the gubernatorial elections and in the majority of House and Senate elections, this is likely the last chance liberals, conservatives, and the right have to defeat the American left. But it will not happen until these groups understand that we are fighting for the survival of America no less than the Union troops were in the first Civil War. That's from Dennis Prager. And his latest book is The Ten Commandments, Still the Best Moral Code. Now that, my friends, is kind of interesting. Now we kind of got something to think about here. All right. Am I out of sound again? Oh, man, I'm going to be livid. What is up with this thing? Test. Yeah, I'm getting out there. Computer shows I'm getting out there, so I don't know if it's me. Well, let's see. Let me check there. Out to the chat room because those guys always let me know something. Well, Tim says I'm getting out. Porky Will says no, I'm not. Porky Will, and I says, well, sorry, the sound is good. You bastards, get me going, and then you guys get me crazy. I'm going nuts. Hey, guest 1936 in the chat room, welcome. Justin's in the chat room. Porky Will's in the chat room. Tim is in the chat room. Feel free to join them and rip and rock and roll while we get this, like, it's information out. This is important stuff. Now, I did find another Dennis Prager clown because he seems to be like the only guy out here that's talking about this situation. And this one, I just see something here. Another one I wanted to get to you guys here. Hold on. I can find it real quick. Oh no, that's wrong. No. Find it here. Because this will really get you going. No. We don't want to do that. You know, if I didn't have to restart this, I wouldn't have to be doing this on the run. So I gotta redo everything on the run. Yay, thank you. No, that's wrong as usual. Let me see what I got here. No. Let me see. Yeah, maybe. Is this it? Let me check real quick. Nah, that's not it either. Oh, where the hell is it? I hate this when I have to try to do this on the run because it sucks. Let me try this. Come on. Okay. Really? Just be patient with me. And just, you know. Oh, is this it? Okay. I think I got it. I think I found it. And I want to make sure. Yeah. Got it. Okay. Got it. Okay. Oh, I swear, trying to get stuff going here. All right. Come on. Kick in, baby. Did that one. Dum-de-dum-de-dum. Okay, got it. This one, The American Thinker. Let me check something. Yep. Okay, got it. All right. One thing from The American Thinker, because we're talking about the... thanks, Justin, you gave me this. I explained at the beginning of the show that you gave me the idea for this show, that we're looking at the second American Civil War. All right. And it took me a while to find some of these articles because a lot of people are afraid to, you know, talk about it. I want to welcome the NSA to the broadcast. I'm sure when they posted this, I lit up on their boogeyman screens. Please call in if you are with the National Security Agency. I'd like to talk to you guys. But the rest of you, hold on till we get the rest of this stuff out because I want to get this information here. It's that important. All right. Okay. But The American Thinker, this is by Robert Arvey. This is written February 11th, almost a full month after President Trump was inaugurated. You know, President Trump, Hillary, and Obama's president. Now, wars begin when, in a major crisis, no peaceful solutions can be found. We are at or near that point. The political left considers us irremediably evil and dangerous. Thusly, they, you know, do they justify engaging in violence, sending their version of brown shirts onto college campuses to prevent our side from even speaking? Welcome to Kristallnacht 2017. There are ministries of propaganda, such as, what is this? No. There is... Oh, man, if I ever find out who's doing that, I'll kill them. Oh, this piece of crap. They're gone. All right. So let me continue on with it. So, welcome to Kristallnacht 2017. Their ministries of propaganda, otherwise known as the mainstream news media, are working full steam ahead, vilifying us and lying about every action President Trump takes. Their armies of lawyers are clearly intending to clog up the courts with so many lawsuits and other legal tactics as to paralyze the Trump administration from achieving anything. The left will yield nothing, not so much as an inch of ground, without political bloodshed. They will jam the airports, block the highways and other choke points of our infrastructure with as many protesters as Soros money can buy, and he cannot afford hundreds of thousands of them. Why? Why is the left not satisfied to peacefully oppose us? Why are leftists declared all-out political war? It is because they must. The social left has suddenly and unexpectedly found itself at death's door, the door of permanent and irreversible loss of political power. Their worst nightmare is that a year from now, Trump's policies will have improved the economy, so much so that a large majority of Americans will be grateful to him and to the Republican Congress. Whatever is good for America is now bad for the Democrats. Not merely bad, but politically fatal. The left will be permanently discredited, out of power, and cut off from the billions upon billions of dollars they now wallow in at our expense. People kill for that kind of power and money. This is existential warfare. It has just begun. Do not waver. So what do you think, yeah? Is he right? Now, here's the, this is it. Now, this one's going to be really interesting. You guys are going to love this one, I'll tell you. This was written in 2003. 2003. It's a two-parter. And again, this is by Dennis Prager. He wrote this over 10 years ago. He wrote it 14 years ago. This is, I mean, say what you want about Dennis. He does. He saw this coming before a lot of other people did. So we have to ask ourselves, the Second American Civil War, what it's about. Whatever your politics, you have to be oblivious to reality to deny that America today is torn by ideological divisions as deep as those of the Civil War era. We are, in fact, in the midst of the Second American Civil War. Of course, one obvious difference between the two is that the Second War is thus far nonviolent. Remember, this was written in 2003. On the other hand, there is probably more hatred between the opposing sides today than there were during the first Civil War, and I'm not talking about extremists. A senior editor of the respected center-left New Republic just wrote an article titled "The Case for Bush Hatred," an article that could have been written by writers at most major American newspapers, by most Hollywood celebrities, and almost anyone else left of center, and the conservative hatred of former President Bill Clinton was equally deep. Now, in general, however, the similarities are greater than the differences, and once again, the North and the South are at odds, though many individuals on each side identify with the other. And once again, the fate of the nation hangs in the balance. The two sides, values and visions of America, are as incompatible as they were in the 1860s. For those Americans who do not know what side they are on, or who are not certain about what the Second American Civil War is being fought over, I offer a list of the most important areas of conflict. While the views of many, probably even most, Americans do not fall entirely on the other side, the two competing camps are quite distinguishable. On one side are those on the left, liberals, leftists, and greens, who tend to agree with one another on almost all major issues. On the other side are those on the right, conservatives, rightists, and libertarians, who agree on stopping the left but differ with one another more often than those on the left do. So here then is part one of the list of the major differences that are tearing America apart. The left believes in removing America's Judeo-Christian identity. For example, removing under God from the Pledge of Allegiance, in God we trust from the currency, the oath to God and country from the Boy Scouts pledge, etc. The right believes that destroying these symbols and this identity is tantamount to destroying America. The left regards America as morally inferior to many European societies with their abolition of the death penalty, cradle-to-grave welfare, and religion-free life. And it does not believe that there are distinctive American values worth preserving. The right regards America as the last best hope for humanity and believes that there are distinctive American values. The unique combination of a religious, which is Judeo-Christian society, a secular government, personal liberty, and capitalism worth fighting and dying for. The left believes that impersonal companies, multinational and otherwise, with their insatiable drive for profits, have a profoundly destructive effect on the country. The right believes... What was that? Oh, see, Dawn's here. All right. The right believes that the legal system, particularly trial lawyers, lawsuits, and judges who make laws, is the greater threat to American society. The left believes multiculturalism should be the ideal for American schools and for government policy. The right believes that the Americanization of all students is indispensable to the survival of the United States. The left believes that the Boy Scouts, as currently constituted, pose a moral threat to society. The right believes the Boy Scouts continue to be one of the greatest moral institutions in the country. The left believes in equality more than liberty. The right believes more in liberty. For example, the left believes that for the equality's sake, men's clubs must accept women. The right believes that for liberty's sake, associations must be free to choose their own members. The left believes that when schools give out condoms to teenagers, they are promoting safe sex. The right believes that when the schools give out condoms, they are promoting more sex. The left believes that poverty, racism, and psychopathology cause violent crime. The right believes a lack of self-control, lack of religious practice, and a lack of good values are the primary causes of violent crime. The left believes that war is not the answer. The right believes that war is often the only answer to government evil. Now, any one of these differences is enough to create an entirely different America added together. The differences are just people who live in different worlds that are on a collision course. Now, these are only some of the conflicting views. Now, part two. I described 9 areas of major conflict between the right and left in American life, the conflict that rivals the first Civil War in intensity, though thankfully not in violence. Here in part two, we describe 15 others. The left regards American nationalism as dangerous, is more comfortable celebrating world citizenship, and prefers that America follow the lead of international organizations such as the United Nations. The right celebrates American nationalism, distrusts world organizations, prefers that America lead humanity, and regards the United Nations as a largely a moral wasteland. Remember, this is 2003. He's writing this. The left believes that sensitivity to minorities' feelings trumps the majority's will. The right... What is that? What... If I could find that. No, I got something going on in the... Oh, you bastards. Get out of there. Got it. Found it. Okay. You know, I'm trying to tell you guys about this. All right. Meanwhile. All right. Where were we? Yeah. The left believes that sensitivity to minorities' feelings trumps the majority's will. The right believes that when not immoral, the majority's will trumps that of the minority. For example, because some employees do not celebrate Christmas, the left believes that organizations should rename their Christmas party the holiday party with the holiday tree. The right believes that because the vast majority of Americans celebrate Christmas, the party should be called the Christmas party. The left believes that a woman must have an unrestricted right to choose an abortion, but no right to choose a silicone breast implant. The right believes that society must decide when abortions are moral and legal, but a woman has the right to choose to have a silicone breast implant. The left believes that attacking world poverty will greatly reduce Islamic terror. The right believes that poverty is largely unrelated to Islamic terror. The right also believes that by attacking Islamic terror, it will greatly reduce it. The left believes that George W. Bush attacked Iraq mostly for economic gain. The right believes George Bush attacked Iraq to protect America and to change the Arab world for the better. The left believes that a high rate of taxation of people who earn more money is a moral imperative. The right believes that allowing people to keep as much of their money as possible is a moral imperative. The left identifies with the values of most university professors in liberal arts and values their insights. The right regards most of these professors as moral idiots. The left believes that the greatest danger to mankind, as former Vice President Al Gore wrote in his book, Earth in the Balance, is a threat to the environment. The right believes that the greatest danger to humanity is and always has been human evil. The left believes that marriage should be redefined and that the judges alone are entitled to do so. The right believes that the millennia-old definition of marriage as between members of two sexes is inviolable and that it can't be redefined by jurists. The left believes in terms of parenthood. All a child needs is love, whether that love comes from a single parent, two men, two women, or some other adult. The right believes that the children do best with the love of two married parents of the opposite sex. The left believes that opposing race-based college dorms, graduation ceremonies, congressional caucuses, or professional organizations is, well, you know, racist. The right believes that the race-based college dorms, graduation ceremonies, congressional caucuses, and professional organizations are racist. The left believes that labeling any enemy of the United States evil is wrong. It was wrong when President Ronald Reagan labeled the Soviet Union an evil empire, and it was wrong when President George Bush labeled Iran, Iraq, and North Korea an axis of evil. The right believes that not labeling such regimes evil is a sign of moral confusion and appeasement. The left is preoccupied with health. Leftist parents are more likely to believe that it is preferable that their teenager cheat on a test than smoke. And where were we? And parents on the right are more likely to believe that it is believed that their teenager smoke than cheat. Welcome, Chuck Norris. I'm glad you're listening, buddy. Mike, welcome also. The left believes that as America and the Soviet Union are equally responsible for the Cold War, Israel and the Palestinians are equally responsible for Middle East violence. The right believes that just as the Soviets are responsible for the Cold War, the Arab enemies of Israel are responsible for Middle East violence. The left believes that the criticism of Christianity is important and that criticism of Islam is bigoted. The right believes that criticism of Islam is important and the most important criticism and that most criticism of Christianity is bigoted. Now, I am well aware that not everyone on the left agrees with every leftist position, and not everyone on the right agrees with every rightist one. Nat Hentoff is a leftist who doesn't support abortion rights. Pat Buchanan is a rightist who doesn't support Israel. But the existence of individual exceptions does not negate the fact that all positions listed here as left or right are correctly labeled. The fact is this country is profoundly divided on virtually every major social, personal, and political issue. We are in the midst of the second American Civil War. Who wins it will determine the nature of this country as much as the winner of the first did. Well, is he right? Is he correct? Are we in the middle of a second American Civil War? Is it possible we are? Maybe people on the right don't even realize that fact, but people on the left have been engaging in violence since that was written in 2003. I just want everybody to think about this, and, you know, I really want to know, are we involved? Have we reached that point where we're going to be battling in the streets? For example, it will not be state versus state. It might be county versus county. It might be inner city versus the suburbs and the rural areas. It will be, could it be red county versus blue county? It's getting that microscopic. I want to know. What do you think? Our number is 516-453-9389. Guest 1936 is in the chat room. Welcome. This might be a little bit more interesting for you. Let me make sure I got it here. No, we did that. Did we do that one? We did. Come on. Please. I swear, I just hate a lot of this stuff. Anyways, what is it I want to do here? Oh, yeah, I want to find this other one. Something that's probably a bit more closer to what we're talking about. No, that's goofy. Not going to do that one. Look, I'm trying to find stuff that actually makes sense. Trying to find something a little bit more objective, because right now I'm looking at a bunch of stuff that is not objective at all. No. Yeah, we did. We talked about Dennis Prager. No, that's ridiculous, too. No, don't want to do that. You know, I see a lot of the stuff, you know, the Second American Civil War. And a lot of it seems to be, oh, good Lord, no. Not going to do it. It wouldn't be prudent. Let's see what we got here. No, that's stupid. No, that's dumb. I will not do it. I will not allow it. No, I will not allow that either. Oh, are you serious? No. You know, you would be surprised at this stuff. Dude, you know, Google Second American Civil War and you'll see all the crap I'm trying to go through real quick. If I didn't have to start this show over again, I would have had everything set. But I had to do everything on the fly. But that's okay. Because you guys are worth it. What is that? Is this it? What's this? All right. Is this what I wanted to talk about here? It might be. Let me see. Yeah. Looking, this might be it. Okay. Good. Got it. William Brute Bradford wrote this. He says, without a national commitment to limited government and civil discourse, we will find ourselves in the midst of a modern civil war in America unless we take steps to avoid it. Now, this is what he's talking about, people. This was written December 5th, 2015, a little over a year ago, almost a year and a half ago. So we're getting a little bit closer here. And it says, Americans are split into two utterly opposed camps at odds over guns, gays, climate change, abortion, the welfare state, health care, free speech, and national security. In the media, on the streets, and in workplaces, conservatives and progressives battle over everything. The bitterness of this internal division has threatened civil war since 1789, unleashed it at once, and may do so again. The United States, circa 2015, is in a state of pre-Civil War, should terrify all Americans. As Union General William Tecumseh Sherman, responsible for the deaths of at least 3% of his countrymen, noted while blazing through Georgia in 1864, war is hell. Thus, because Civil Wars are particularly hellacious, they are especially to be avoided. Now, ferocious civil wars in Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, and Yemen, and the 1990s-era wars in Yugoslavia and Rwanda make clear what happens when a nation comes apart. Of course, brothers fight brothers. Blood runs. Things burn. People die by the millions. Nearly a score of civil wars ongoing across the globe attest to the prudence surrenders to passion all too frequently. And why? You ready? We got three reasons, and I want you all to bear with me on it, okay? First of all, the impetus to civil war is ideological. It is not economic or territorial. A nation splits on the basis of deeply incompatible beliefs, values, and ideas about the relationship between the state and the people. There is a divide about how life, liberty, and property should be resolved. There is a divide about who resolves conflicts and how. Ideologically, hostile, tribes trapped within national boundaries find no zone of agreement and no modus vivendi that allow them to coexist. Second, a nation lurching towards civil war has abandoned its formula for resolving disputes. Many national constitutions limit governmental powers and delimit the boundaries between public and private. People in well-governed republics can choose their versions of the good life within the private sphere. Now, where issues are inherently public in nature, and thus within governmental province, the Constitution provides for the resolution of political and legal conflicts. Now, when followed, constitutions remove many issues from public life, leaving individuals free to pursue happiness so long as that pursuit does not intrude on the rights of others. And constitutions provide rules and principles for fairly and authoritatively resolving what disputes remain. Yet inhabitants of nations in cold civil wars no longer agree as to constitutional meanings and reject any limits upon government powers, or worse, abandon constitutions to the passions of temporary political majorities, damning the rights of the minorities in the process. Third, both sides in pre-Civil War mode see the other not merely as misguided, but as evil, and view their ideas and those who hold them as beyond persuasion, fit solely for excommunication and even extermination. All these preconditions currently exist in the United States of 2015. Contemporary American conservatives revere the military, the police, the family, houses of worship, and gun ownership. They champion a limited federal government charged simply with the defense of life, liberty, and property against domestic and foreign threats. They reject taxing and spending to feed a welfare state. Conservatives ground notions of the good life in traditional morality and demand government leave them their values and their wallets alone. President Thomas Jefferson best articulated conservative ideology when he opined that that government is best which governs least. Now, American progressives, in contrast, champion Planned Parenthood, Obamacare, liberal academia, gay marriage, activism against climate change. For progressives, government is but an engine to promote, you ready, social justice through wealth redistribution. President Franklin D. Roosevelt, in the 1944 State of the Union Address, articulated a progressive ideology that includes rights to employment, food, clothing, recreation, housing, medical care, retirement, education, and recreation. Social welfare expenditures trump national security, and because combating Islamist terrorism would take money away from the transformative projects, it cannot be acknowledged to exist. Further, gun control is needed to defame preemptively conservative opposition and the capacity to resist the taxes and regulations at the heart of the fundamentally transformative progressive project. In short, progressive must tax and spend while grabbing guns and civil liberties to prevail. The ideological divide maps across every issue facing Americans today: gun rights, Obamacare, gay marriage, abortion, free speech, climate change, immigration, radical Islam, and so forth. Conservatives and progressives could not agree as to a common core of facts and assumptions upon which to negotiate differences, even if they were willing to try to do it. So worse, Americans have completely bifurcated on the subject of the Constitution, which for conservative prohibits virtually all of what progressives intend. The document is a series of thou shall nots directed toward the government. Those shall nots protect your individual rights to life, liberty, property, and particularly through the Second Amendment, enable the people to resist tyranny. For progressives, the Constitution is a fundamentally flawed anachronism that judges must interpret to allow the will of the masses, or even unelected judges. Sound like something we heard last week, huh? To fundamentally transform the nation, the tortured Supreme Court logic on Obamacare and gay marriage and the reactions after the fact, despair on the part of the conservatives, and a celebratory White House illuminated in the rainbow flag illustrates just how divided Americans are over the meaning of the Constitution's power over our laws and liberty. Third, American progressives have ramped up their demonization of conservatives. Now, President Obama openly described Republicans as the enemy in campaigning for Hispanic votes. And in a recent Democratic presidential debate, progressive candidate Hillary Clinton described Republicans not radical Islam, not a nuclear Iran, not economic malaise, not dreaded diseases as her primary foe. Black Lives Matter openly calls for the murder of law enforcement officers. Progressive commentators smear Ben Carson in an attempt to destroy his candidacy rather than engage his message. Champions of the Second Amendment are, you know, anti-government gun nuts, collectively responsible for shootings of innocents at abortion facilities and elsewhere. Principled opponents of gay marriage are homophobes to be sued and jailed. Heralds of the threat of radical Islam imported under the guise of refugees are Islamophobes scared of widows and orphans. Administrators whose sole crime is being white and insufficiently obeisant to sophomoric student radicals demanding safe spaces and insulation from critical thought are racist to be fired immediately. Global warming skeptics are thought criminals on moral par with Holocaust deniers. Social media battles waged by progressive character assassins against conservative academics and politicians approach cyber warfare. In 2015, the U.S. is $20 trillion in debt under Islamist attack and adrift from its political and moral traditions. It is not merely a country in steep military and economic decline. It is a republic and a cold civil war. Every issue is contested by opposed camps who convert disagreements into hatred and enmity. Rule of the mob is replacing rule of law, and rather than look outward for enemies, we turn inward. ISIS has threatened to make the U.S. streets run with blood. We may beat them to it, or at least help them prevail. We must do three things right now to save our nation from a civil war. First, we voters and politicians alike must recommit to the Jeffersonian principle of limited government. Not every problem is a government problem. Harnessing government to take resources from some to pay for entitlement that purchase the votes of the entitled is un-American and unaffordable for the masses. Progressive ideology threatens the basic national compact. Attempts to fundamentally transform the nation through legislative or judicial activism inevitably fuel an ideological conflict that imperils the nation. Second, the Constitution establishes a modus vivendi to allow conservatives and progressives to coexist, but only if we read that document as the Founding Fathers intended it, as a series of thou shalt nots limiting government power. Progressives can have their safe space to live their version of the good life in the private, but not in the public sphere. They must stop trying to fundamentally transform the United States of America. That very phrase declares ideological warfare and abandons the Constitution, laying down two of the three predicates for a U.S. Civil War. Finally, Americans must relearn what the concept of enemy means. It isn't an opposing political party. Americans have lost the knowledge that those who fought in World War II possessed. Enemies are those who threaten the continued existence of the nation. Radical Islam is the enemy of the 21st century, just as Nazi and communism were the enemies of the 20th. We must admit this and come together to defeat it. Now, in 1995, an ethnic Serb fighting on behalf of Croatia advised this author that As horrific as the civil war in Yugoslavia had been, the second civil war he predicted for our nation would be far more terrible and bloody, making the world forget the Yugoslav civil war because the U.S. is far more ideologically divided and resource-rich than his own. Indeed, a second U.S. civil war that inflicted death on the scale of the first would kill 10 million Americans. And I think that's a conservative number. I think it would be a lot higher. So let's prove our Yugoslavian friend wrong by committing to limited government, a traditional understanding of the Constitution, and relearning the concept of the enemy. Only by doing so can we ensure that Americans never suffer the hell of a civil war again. Now, Porky Wheel wants to know, is there anyone awake in the chat room? I will answer that for him. I imagine they are all listening, unlike you. If it pleases Brown, might I continue my show? All right, there. That should keep Porky happy for a while. All right. I want you to remember something. On the brink, if we are in fact on the brink of a second American Civil War. Oh, guest 2029 is also in the chat room. Welcome. I want you to think about something here. Last week, 2 weeks ago, I reported on a story that the left are attempting to become preppers. I said attempting to become preppers. That means that they're buying food and water extra to store it. Some might even avail themselves of the Second Amendment, though that remains to be seen. So my question is this. The left, which traditionally rejects the Second Amendment in terms of private firearm ownership, if they're starting to buy firearms, is that not another step towards a second American Civil War? We see what's going on in the streets with protest, violent protest. We see the looting. We see the burning. We see the theft. We see the physical attacks on people who don't agree with them politically. Is that another step? Are we inching towards it? It's something to think about. As preppers, we have to assume that, yes, this is where it's going, and we have to take steps to ensure that ourselves and our families and our loved ones are accounted for and are made safe by our preparations ahead of time. Now, like I said, it won't be state versus state. So if you're thinking that, you know, the geographic boundaries will apply, it will not. If anything, it'll be ideological boundaries by county. And most heavily will be in the counties that were close, a close split between red and blue. It could even devolve down into town versus town. Are we as Americans ready to face the horrors of another civil war? Because I'm going to tell you something, and I want you all to understand it. And I posted this sometimes, and that a war in America will have no rules of engagement. Like, for example, the military has now. that the military, once when they were in Iraq, had the rule that they could not open fire on anyone until they were fired upon. That rule will not be adhered to should there be another civil war in America. Now, the question becomes, we know the government's already fractured. Politically, this government is already fractured. Here's something. I just heard this tonight. I was watching Lou Dobbs before I came on. And I don't know if you're aware of him. His name is General Jack Keane. He's retired. He used to be Vice Chief of Staff of the Army. Last week, the new Vice Chief of Staff told a congressional committee, now get this, 3 out of 58 brigades can go to combat today. 3 out of 58 can go to combat today. Think about that. I see guest 2029-7377 is in the chat room. Welcome. Guest 1936 is in the chat room. Welcome. Porky Wheel in Northern Ireland is trying to figure out what the hell's going on. You know, to tell the truth, you know, Porky Wheel lived through his own civil war in Northern Ireland. He can attest to the brutality of it. So the military, you know, you could say the advantage would go to the side that has the military on it. Well, if you have 58 combat brigades and only three could go to combat in the next hour, what does that tell you about that? 3 brigades. It's not many men. So where, you know, if it were to be state versus state, you know, I don't even want to go there because I don't think that would happen. I think it'd be on a much more microscopic level. Like I said, county versus county, town versus town, red versus blue, inner city versus the suburbs and rural areas. Some suburbs against themselves, you know, each other. Something to think about: the horrors of a second American Civil War. And don't think for a moment that internationally, while America's at war with itself, don't think for a moment that that other countries will not hesitate to interfere in that little war. Don't think for a moment they won't be supplying. They will. About the only way to keep that from happening, I suppose, would be the Navy'd have to blockade both coasts and try to shut down everything and let the land war go as it may be. Would the military fracture, for example, let's say a liberal state like, let me think, how about this? The liberal state of Massachusetts versus, say, the conservative state of South Carolina. Let's imagine their Air National Guard units dogfighting over, say, Virginia. Could that be a possibility? Sure. Would it be? I don't know. I will say this, if open warfare does, and like many people have, you know, you've heard tonight, people who know more about this than I do, we're in a state of a civil war. It's just a cold war right now. It can go hot at any time. And the question becomes, who lights the fuse? Who draws first blood? And where does it stop? Or does it stop? Can it stop? I don't know. you want to opine on this, give me a call. 516-453-9389. 516-453-9389. Let's get into this. I got about an hour left. And if you don't want to, that's cool. We don't have to. It's something to consider. Let me ask you this. If it breaks down to the county level, for example, for a prime example, you got Cook County where Chicago is, and then you got the collar counties. Generally speaking, not all the time, Chicago always goes Democratic, and the collar counties surrounding Cook County always go Republican. Not all the time, but generally speaking. If there was a second American Civil War to break out, do you think, or would you want to go to war in Cook County? Or would you just say, screw them, wall them off, and let them starve themselves into submission? After all, it's Chicago. Who the hell really wants Chicago? Who the hell really wants Los Angeles? It's a hellhole already. What about New York? All the other big cities. Wall them off. Build a wall. I don't know. I'm asking you the question, and it's begging for an answer. Is there an answer? I don't know. All right. What else is happening? Well, we're not getting any calls on this. You know, I thought Dawn would be all over this tonight. I thought this would, that's right here. Dawn would be all over this tonight. All over it. But I said, hey, why don't you call in? But she has not. She has disappointed me once again, and she shall be punished. Yes? I'm just asking. Uh-huh. Oh, yes. Michael R. I don't know if I was still on the air. I had to type, letting them know, yes. Had to restart the show. So hopefully he's listening in. I like him. All right. In the meantime, what else are we looking at? Now, people in the chat room. Well, I guess, I don't know. See what happens with it. In the meantime. All right, that's about pretty much what I wanted to talk about tonight. Is there anybody else that wants to say anything? Anything you want to opine on? What do you think? Are we right? Are we wrong? What? Say something. Call in and be heard. Unless, of course, somehow, some way, this got screwed up again. Yes, Gary, we had to restart the show. My, oh, my, oh, my. I'm glad people are asking, is the show still on? Because that shows that they're listening. They're tuning in. That's good. That's very good. All right. You don't want to talk about that. Okay. We don't have to talk about that. You don't want to talk about it? That's cool. I thought it would be an interesting subject for us to discuss. Perhaps you'd like to discuss pressure canning asparagus at home. Would that be a topic that you'd all be interested in? Because we can talk about that. Well, we can. What else? Or we could talk about the top 10 barter items every prepper should have. Perhaps that'd be something. Oh, no, don't tell me. Oh, I tell you, every time we turn around, I got to get a hold of. your liberal crown is not happy. No, they're probably not, Justin. You're probably laughing. If it pleases the crown. No, I just checked the control panel. It shows that the mic is getting out there. So as far as I know, we're still on the air. We're still doing well. I just checked it again. Perhaps it's something on Porky Wheel's end. Maybe he's not getting the signal. I don't know. If it pleases the crown, might we discuss this topic or not? Well, 516-453-9389. Again, 516-453-9389. You guys are killing me. So I'll tell you what. Let's talk about pressure canning asparagus. Maybe this topic is too close to some people's hearts and minds. Maybe they'll want to discuss it. I don't know. But let's talk about, let me call up that story so we can talk about pressure canning asparagus at home. Because I know we all want to do that. Let me see. What can we talk about that? No. Yes. No. Yes, I may. All right. Well, let's talk about pressure canning asparagus. Asparagus is one of those amazing gifts of spring. Put it on par with the English pea and arugula as one of those first blessings from the garden. So if asparagus is cooked too long, it can become terrible. In fact, for many years, I thought asparagus was what came out of the cans at the supermarket. When you can your own asparagus, you get to preserve as much of that spring harvest as possible. So we're going to talk about a great method for canning asparagus and saving it for a time when your asparagus has long stopped producing. The pressure cooker method on how long and how much to can. So let's find out what we got. Oh, nope. Let's try it. Let's see what we got here. Let's see. Who's this from? Backtoourroots.net. They want to talk about this. So let's see. How can you do it? All right. Here's what you need for canning asparagus. You're going to need fresh asparagus spears, canning jars, pints, 1.5 pints or quarts, new lids, rings, boiling water. Sea salt is optional. Now, to prepare asparagus, wash them in a sink of cold water by swishing them back and forth. Now, bend the spears near the bottom until they snap in two. This separates the woody part of the stem from the tender part. Don't throw those ends out, though. Toss them in the freezer for later. You need to measure the height of the jars you'll be using. You need a 1-inch head space, so your spears need to be 1 inch shorter than the jars. So put the spears on a cutting board and measure them. Cut the stem off so they are the correct length. You can also add those pieces to the ends you snapped off and use them later to make creamy asparagus soup. Porky Wheels in the chat room. He wants to know, does any of you know how about making jerky? Anybody? And no one's answered him. And no one's calling. I'm disappointed. I thought I had a really great topic, but here you go. So, measure twice, cut once. You can raw pack or hot pack your asparagus spear. Now, here's how you raw pack asparagus. Before you begin, make sure your jars are clean and hot and your lids are prepared according to the manufacturer's directions. Pack the spears into the clean, hot jars as tightly as you can. The spears will shrink up dramatically, so really pack them in there. If you are canning pieces, pack them as tightly as you can, leaving 1 inch of space. And it's easier to pack them in the jar when it's sideways, okay? Now, fill the jar with boiling water, again, leaving 1 inch of headspace. Add salt if desired, using 1/2 teaspoon for pints and 1/2 pints and 1 teaspoon for quarts. Wipe the rim with a clean, dry cloth. Now, seat the lid and put on the ring, tightening just until finger tight. Fill and close the remaining jars. Place the jars in the canner, adding the amount of hot water appropriate for your canner. Secure the canner lid, turn on the heat, and vent for the amount of time specified for your canner. place the weight on the vent and bring up the pressure. If you're using a dial gauge canner, process at 11 pounds of pressure for 30 minutes for pints, 40 minutes for 1.5 pints and quarts. If you're using a weighted gauge canner, use the 10-pound weight and process for the same length of time. Don't forget to adjust for your altitude if necessary. After processing, allow the canner to cool down. Removing the jars and put them on a towels in a draft-free location to cool. After a minimum of 12 hours, check the seals. Make a cool label with the contents and the date and put them in your pantry. Now you can stand back and admire your handiwork. There. All right. Well, I guess that's our show for tonight. We talked about canning asparagus. We talked about possibly, if this country is on the verge of a second American Civil War. I don't know where else we can go from here tonight. So, for Sunday, besides, it's Sunday night. A lot of you probably have to get up in the morning. That's okay. Be back Wednesday night with some more information for you. Good information that all of you need, because you're the smartest audience, smartest listeners. You guys are, really. So, as long as we're there, we're there tonight. And we'll be back Wednesday night, 8 o'clock Central. If you haven't heard about the late Saturday show, we did our second test episode last night about 11 p.m. Give it a listen. If you like it, fine. If you don't, that's okay, too. I'm just seeing if going at a later time would be better for some people. So, anyways, that's it. Think about it, what we talked about tonight, and you have to decide for yourself whether or not we are on the verge of a second civil war or already in a civil war, only it's a cold war right now, which could go hot. If it goes hot, the ramifications would be horrific. Something to think about, my friends. My listeners, thank you, thank you, thank you. Appreciate it. With that said, I'll be signing off for tonight. Thanks for listening. I'm John Jeffers at the Contra Radio Network. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Central. Have a good night. Have a good work week, guys. Good night.
Welcome to Total Wine and More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine and More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in store or online at TotalWine.com.